Welcome to today's episode of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast presented by Overdrive. Just Adam today. And man, what an awesome episode I have for you. I interviewed New York Times bestselling author and current Good Morning America Book Club Pick of the Month author, Zakiya Delilah Harris, author of The Other Black Girl, which is such a wonderful book and is getting so much buzz, and it is so well deserved. Everywhere is describing it as Get Out meets The Devil Wears Prada, and honestly, it's pretty perfect. We have such an incredible conversation about not only the publishing world, which Zakiya was in for several years, but a lot of like different things about how a reader of various backgrounds might read her book. And it was just, I don't know, she and I hit it off really fast. We kind of became fast friends and got to the point where we kind of create a really safe space for each other to talk about stuff that maybe you wouldn't initially be comfortable talking about with people who come from a different background as you. But we kind of formed this trust really quickly in our conversation where we knew we could talk about whatever we wanted to. I think it makes for a really powerful conversation about race and the publishing world and just all sorts of stuff. But also we very much nerd out about different aspects of the publishing world because it's very, as I like to say, inside baseball, because she knows every single aspect of how a book gets put together. So we have a lot of fun. You guys are going to just adore this. And if you haven't read The Other Black Girl yet, because it just came out recently, go get it. Like I said, it's number 6 on the New York Times bestsellers list right now. It is getting buzz all over the place. Good Morning America grabbed it as their book club pick of the month. Just so much going on. And yeah, you got to check this out. Some other stuff that I just want to make sure you're aware of later this week. On Thursday, we're doing a live interview with Kate Moore on Zoom. She is the author of The Woman They Could Not Silence, and her other book, Radium Girls, was just an absolutely stunning achievement. So this is going to be amazing. If you go to overdrive.com, it's right on the top of the screen. You can sign up for there. You can sign up there. We've got a whole bunch of people that are joining us. So really excited about that. Our library friends, we've been pushing this past couple of weeks, but you can join us for Digipalooza in August. If you go to digipalooza.com, you can sign up there and see Jill and I interview Andy Weir amongst a whole bunch of other people that you will really adore hearing from if you are in, you know, the library world. Our keynote speakers are just incredible. We have Dr. Carla Hayden as one of our main keynote speakers. Wow, a lot of stuff really going on that I think you're going to like. And also, as I mentioned before, if you would like to grab a Pride t-shirt, a Libby Pride t-shirt, you can do that at shop.overdrive.com, and 100% of the proceeds go to the American Library Association's Office of Diversity. So all good things. I'll put all the links in our show notes there. That is a lot of housekeeping. I don't want to make you guys wait any longer. I want you to very much enjoy this conversation with Zakiya Delilah Harris, author of The Other Black Girl. Professional Book Nerds Podcast. We kind of like leading off our conversations with having you, the author, introduce your book, because The Other Black Girl, I feel like a lot of the books I've been reading lately are books where, like, when I talk to the author, I'm like, I don't want to be the person who talks about the plot because there's so much that might be spoilery. So I'll let you introduce it and we'll just kind of jump off from there.
Sounds good. Yes, I've gotten it down where I'm able to avoid spoilers.
So. All right. Well, I'll let you do an intro. Like I said, I'll do like the start of the episode stuff after the fact. So awesome. You don't have to worry about that. So if you just want to introduce The Other Black Girl, we'll just go from there.
Sounds good. And then one question: should I say my name too, or
whatever? You don't need to. I mean, you can, okay. But I'll do all that at the beginning. Yeah, no worries.
Okay. Awesome. All right. So. The Other Black Girl mainly follows a young woman named Nella Rogers. She is 26, a young Black woman, and she's been working at Wagner Books in editorial for the last 2 years. And Wagner Books is a very prestigious, very white publishing house, and she's been the only Black person working there. Mm-hmm. So she's very excited when Hazel, another young Black woman who is from Harlem, starts working in the cubicle next to hers. She's like, yes, I finally have someone else to share all the brunt of the microaggressions with and mm-hmm. complain about all these white people with and just talk about Black hair with, like a mm-hmm. safe space. But after a series of strange, unsettling things start happening at the office and for Nella, Nella mm-hmm. starts to wonder if Hazel is really all that she seems. And unfolding alongside Nella's story are three other voices, the voices of three other Black women, Kendra Ray, Diana, and Shawnee. They are all tied also to the publishing world. Even though they are, though, they've all chosen very different paths in life. And they're all bound, along with Nella, by one secret that has implications not just for them, but for Black women all over the world. So that's the other Black Girl in a nutshell.
You gotta say, you absolutely got that down. Yeah, introduction to the book. Yeah. So for people who might not know your background, you have a history in publishing, right?
Yes. Yep.
So what was your experience like and everything?
Yeah. I worked in editorial for 2.5, close to 3 years. I was an editorial assistant, and then I was promoted after a couple years to be an assistant editor, which was really exciting because, like I kind of alluded to in the book, it is hard to move up in that world. Mm-hmm. The publishing world itself, in a lot of ways, is very old-fashioned and goes by certain rules that feel outdated, I think, for outsiders, at least for me when I first started working mm-hmm. there. I was like, this is so, like, some of these things are very strange. And one of those things that was strange was how white it was.
Oh, yeah.
I hadn't really worked in a corporate setting like that before. So, I mean, I had ideas of what it would be like. And so when I got there, I mean, I loved it. I felt very fortunate. I was working at a very hard to get into imprint, or for two imprints, technically. And I was really excited. I loved editing. I loved the idea of working with authors and words mm-hmm. and all of those things. But I also, you know, would look around the table and the diversity was just not there. I had it better than Nella. I wasn't the only Black person on my floor mm-hmm. or at my job, but I was one of very, very few. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was hard. You know, I really enjoyed, like I said, I enjoyed the work. I enjoyed this mission of really publishing books that mattered and books mm-hmm. that, you know, would change the world, as maybe as like optimistic as it sounds. But at the same time, you know, it's hard to feel like things aren't changing. We're still mm-hmm. stuck in the 50s. Like there were just those conversations, you know, about diversity felt like they never got past a certain point mm-hmm. because, you know, you have to have everyone on board. And a lot of the younger entry-level employees were on board with that. But, you know, it was hard. It felt like we were shouting into a void at the time when I was there. And so those two kinds of things of like really enjoying the work and then also the lack of diversity. And then also knowing I always wanted to write too. All of those things kind of culminated for me. And that's when I decided to start writing the book.
Yeah. I have so many questions having spent a decade now also kind of tangentially in the publishing world, in the sense that mm-hmm. at this point for the podcast, I feel like I talk to publicists now more than I talk to like my coworkers. but like one of the things I couldn't stop thinking about is you're talking about how sort of old fashioned it is. And I'm like fortunate, I guess, in a way to call it, is by the time I get pitches from publicists, like that, obviously the books are already seeing the light of day. And mm-hmm. so I don't have any idea if it was an editor, an assistant editor, an editor's assistant, like whoever it was that found these books. But because of it's so old fashioned, like exactly what you said, like, I don't think it's cliche to say that books can change the world, because like you never know who's going to be the next, like, James Baldwin, you know, or, you know, Toni Morrison, or whoever it's going to be. Like, earlier this year, I interviewed Robert Jones and for his book, The Prophets. Oh, and like, I just remember reading it and I was like, how, and obviously he has a well-known blog, but I just remember being like, how is this person just now being discovered at like 50? And he's like, literally, it's a book that I have been thinking about for 6 months. And like, books can, and like, so in that world, can you maybe, like, I guess, shine a light for our listeners on what it can be like, and as not even like just as an assistant, but like as a Black assistant, as just like an assistant editor in general, like, what is that process to, like, if you find a book and you need to go to someone and be like, no, this needs to be published. Like, what is that process like?
I mean, you know, I really can't say. While I was there, I saw that happen where an assistant, like an editorial assistant, you know, read something and was like this. I mean, I won't say that there weren't things that my fellow editorial assistants read and loved and really hoped that their boss would publish, but I really do think, and I'm quite sure I'm correct in remembering this, but I would think that, like, if an editor didn't want to publish it, like, it wasn't going to happen. And the say that you have as an editorial assistant is very, very, very little. And your opinion matters. But it really isn't until, and I don't want to make a blanket statement either, because I know every imprint's different, but the mentality of, you know, where I was really that you're there to really supplement, right? Like, you're, and that's not to dismiss the job, because the job is huge. I mean, you're talking to everyone, you're talking to agents, you're talking to production, you're talking to publicity, you're talking, of course, to your boss, the authors, like, all of those things. But you really don't have that much agency. You really have to establish this clout and this credit. And so, I mean, that's also why I think, you know, and I try to get at this with Nella in the book, like, she has been there for so long. I mean, 2 years, grand scheme of things, isn't that long, but in publishing, it's like, it's time. And, you know, she wants to accrue all of this time and get this clout so that she can finally edit, like, the next big Black book, the next big Black writer, as the next big Black editor herself. But that's really hard. It's hard. And so it's, you know, the work-life balance situation is hard too. The low pay when you're an entry-level person. And even as an assistant editor, when I was promoted, I was kind of like, that's it. Like, that's how we're going higher for all the extra, you know, because you are at that point as an assistant editor, that's when you start to really, you can hopefully have more power and start acquiring books yourself. So it's such an interesting world. Like, it really does, I think, in that way, feel old fashioned. And then another thing about it too, that felt old fashioned, I think, is how much of a who you know world it is, is the way, right? Like, with everything kind of, but like, especially with publishing, it feels very, very, I don't know, like a bubble. And it's all kind of everyone's, you know, everyone moves around from different imprints. It's very incestuous, which makes sense. But I also think in a way that really hinders, you know, it from becoming a place that employs people from different classes and all that stuff. You know,
100%. I mean, I will willingly admit, like, the reason we started this podcast was because I work at Overdrive and we have a massive reach. And so, like, now I'd like to think that I'm good at doing author interviews, but like the first 5 or 6 months, I just was emailing publishers and being like, hey, we have a huge reach and you know who we are, and let me talk to someone. And like within like 5 months of launching this podcast, I interviewed James Patterson, and like, I had no business.
That's like, amazing.
And it was very cool. And he was very delightful. And like, we had a lovely conversation, but like, I remember sitting, like, my company flew me to New York to have this conversation. I remember like sitting there being like, I shouldn't be talking to you yet. Like, this shouldn't be happening. And you're absolutely, it's very gatekeepery. And it's very but it's really interesting because while, like you said, you have to get to a certain point to be the person who maybe finds an author or a book. You have a scene where Nella is, as an assistant, she is helping potentially craft the message of what will be a very important book for this publisher. And she gives very honest feedback, and the author gets very offended.
Yeah.
And I'm like, obviously being very vague, people will just, it's pretty early on, but like, it's interesting because you're not empowered as an assistant or to like find the books. But then, like you said, from a supplementary standpoint, you are very important in providing honest, what I have to imagine is sometimes awkward feedback.
Yeah.
For an author. And like, I don't know, just that, like, that's, it's a very, it feels like a very corporate thing to say, well, you can't help find these authors, but we're going to have to, you're going to help us shape the story. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That's not really a question. It's just really.
No. I mean, and I think I've been thinking about it a lot, you know, also of course, as an author now, I mean, and I think seeing the publishing world from where I'm sitting now, it's like, I just think about how much, you know, publishing, like I was saying earlier, like this optimistic idea, books are changing the world, but also like, it's kind of like unrealistic to expect everyone to be on board about mm-hmm. every book, right? Like yeah. the fact that, you know, you really do have to go to work in this industry and a lot of other industries, but I do feel like publishing is different in its own way because it does seem very, and it is like very pure in a lot of ways, but there's mm-hmm. so many people working to make that book what it is, the marketing, all of that is so carefully calculated. And depending on who's in control of all of that, that mm-hmm. affects whether or not you see the book, where you see the book advertised,
yeah,
blurbs, like all of it is very like, it's capitalist, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's kind of hard to think about the fact that like, you know, we have, this is an industry. And then also of course, like people are expected to bring their emotions and their, mm-hmm. their loves and their passion to it. It's such a hard thing to balance, you know?
Well, and there's a scene a little bit later on where they talk about the cover of a book and like they have yes. the whole meeting in it. I'm just like abandoning the questions I prepare because I just want to talk about publishing with you. Like,
I love it.
It's so fun to have someone who like knows the publishing world. And I feel like this is very like inside baseball for listeners. So I think they're going to love it. But like, if you think about covers of books, if you're just a reader and you pick up like, I don't know, a copy of a Neil Gaiman book, and maybe you won't notice that there's a specific layout. And like, if you happen to buy like 8 of his books from the same, mm-hmm. you know, from like a Barnes and Noble, you're like, oh, those are all the same. That was designed for a specific reason. But like, even just what goes into like, oh, traditionally we've done this for this author, so we should keep doing that. Or
yes,
and exactly. Unrelated to that, but like the cover that they got for your book. Good Lord, like both of them, the US and the UK ones, like they're so gorgeous. But it is like so much goes into all of this that I don't think people realize. There's so many steps.
Definitely. And when I was starting, again, like we're having these conversations last summer about, you know, what the book would look like here and in the UK and like all of those things, I really like wanted to get it right. And mm-hmm. I mean, getting it right, like, what does that mean? But I know for me, it meant having a cover that was undeniably and apologetically, like obviously Black. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I look at the book now and I'm still so much in love with it. The UK and US both just like knocked it out of the park. And yeah. I mean, I feel like whenever I talk about this book, I'm looking at it now, by the way, that's why I'm like not looking at you, but I'm just like the spine and like the fact that her face just continues onto the spine. It just really, I love it. I'm so excited about that. And from day one, Atria was just like everything. Like I never felt like I had to compromise mm-hmm. on what I wanted, which not every author has the privilege of saying.
Yeah. Okay. So along those lines, and you can choose not to answer this if you want, mm-hmm. and also don't feel the need to name names, but reading this book, there are a few times where I would talk to like a coworker or someone who also was in like the publishing industry. And like, I would be like, I legit am so impressed that a publisher published this book because like, you, for lack of a better term, like you dunk on publishing pretty hard. And I love it. And it's so important to be so honest, but like, all I could think of was, you know, every author always talks about how many rejections they got before they got an accept. Like, was there feedback from people that was like, you're shining a light too bright on us. Like, were there people that were just like, frankly, like, we can't do this?
You know, you're kind of the first person, I think, to like ever explicitly ask me that. So I appreciate it. No, because I do sometimes bring this up because I think it's important to say, you know, the book is, I love, and I think it's amazing how big the book is already is. It's mm-hmm. So crazy to me, like you say, because it is like so literally about publishing. It hasn't always been this much love for it. Mm-hmm. But there's always been like a decent amount. I don't want to make it sound like there, but anyway, when I was querying agents, that was where it was interesting. So very early on, the book was pretty, I mean, there was different in a few ways, but like the major parts of like the twists, like all mm-hmm. of those were the same, the genre elements. And I did have one agent say they really enjoyed it, but changed the industry to like something like maybe fashion. I can't remember. And I was like, but like, to be honest, I sobbed for like an hour.
Yeah,
because I was still early on. I was like, is this going to be the response I get from everybody? Because when I had started writing it, I had the idea of the two Black women, Hazel and Nella, working in a very white space. And I remember starting it at my desk and being like, there's no way I'm going to be able to like keep this in publishing, maybe. So maybe I'll like flag this and think about other industries. Yeah. But I just kept going and it was just too easy. Like publishing was just too easy to, not because I worked there, not only because I worked there, but also because it's just so, again, just such a different world. And so, I mean, my agent, Stephanie Delman at Greenberg, just like saw it, got it, and was completely on board. And of course, like the when we went out with it, with publishing houses, a lot of people were into it, but there was still, you know, the early stages with agents, I think. And I get it. Like, I understand, you just don't know. But I'm also just, I knew I wasn't going to change it. Like,
yeah. But I mean, like, to your point, I feel like we hear so much from publishers all the time, a lot of like social speak where they'll say like, well, of course we want more diverse authors and we're always pushing to get more BIPOC authors. And then, you know, like Pew or We Need Diverse Books or like PW will release a study at the end of the year. And they're like 13% of the books published this year were by BIPOC. And it's just like, that's why, like, one of the many reasons I love their book so much. And like the reason, like the reason that it's getting so much hype is because it's incredible and everyone needs to read it for a myriad of reasons. But like, I think it's so important to shine that light, because like I said, no matter how many times people think they're doing good enough, like it's not good enough.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And that's what, I mean, that's one of the things I really wanted with this book. I mean, I didn't quite set out to write like this kind of criticism of publishing. Like I didn't care enough about publishing to make that the point of the book, but it definitely, of course, on the other side of it. And the more I wrote, like I said, like peeling back all of those, you know, all of those moments, all of those conversations at the table. Thankfully, again, I never experienced anything that egregious.
That intense,
But I could see it. Like the fact that I could even imagine it happening, and I've had heard stories from other people working in other places about similar conversations like these. I really hope that this book will just inspire people to talk about it. And like you said, there is more to be done. There's always more to be done. Like, even though we're better than we were 30 years ago, like there's still so much that hasn't changed. And I think that those studies are so important and so necessary. And I love whenever they are shared and people are talking about it again, but I'm hoping with this book, it's just one other supplementary thing where it's like, okay, here's actually how this affects individuals, like on a day-to-day basis.
Did you find it challenging ever writing Hazel May, like as this character who is extremely confident and what just has so much going on, but also at times can be a bit unlikable? Like, did you Were there challenges writing? Hey, I just don't want to give anything away about these characters.
Yeah, so like, yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Did you struggle to like? Were there challenges in putting that character together?
I think that's also a very good question. I think there were struggles in the sense that I have never set out to write a book like this. Like I'd been working on another book, but it was less of like a. It was a little more grounded in reality, I guess I'll say, if that's not giving too much away. So, but this one, I mean, there's a lot of ambiguity. There's a lot of subtext. And a lot of it is wrapped up in Nella's perception, because Nella is very anxious and often very like self-conscious. Like we don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on the outside. She shows people certain things, but on the inside she's just like perceiving things and like stressing. It's a lot. There's a lot going on. And so I think it was hard for me because I wanted to make sure I got Hazel right and make sure that I wanted, like, she's very complex in the sense that, like, I mean, gaslighting, I think itself is like, I think something we've seen, but I also wanted to do it in a believable way, you know, of like how one Black woman might gaslight another Black woman. And yeah, no, that was really tricky, but I also could see her existing because I really wanted to kind of poke fun also at like the way we all draw lines, like this is acceptable, but this is acceptable, like that kind of thing. And Nella does that too. And both of them have their own kind of codes, but Nella expects to have the same code as her. And so I wanted to play with that and kind of explore that dynamic too.
Well, and I'll call myself out because while reading it, like, I don't know if this was something you intended to do, but like as a white person reading this book, there were so many times when I would read it and like I would make a snap judgment based on something that happened about Nella or Hazel. And then like a thing would happen a few chapters later that would kind of prove me wrong. And like, it was a really interesting internal, like not struggle, but just like a thought provoking thing for me as a white reader to be like, wait, is this like a micro racism, like a passive racism thing that I'm doing because I'm judging these characters? And like, I don't know. It just kept me thinking throughout the whole book. And if that was something you were hoping to accomplish, you did it in spades. Like, congratulations. But like, it's just so interesting.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just so interesting. Cause like I said, like something would happen and I'd be like, is this just because I'm a white male and I can't understand this conversation? Or is this a thing that's actually gaslighting, or like, am I being kind of racist? I don't know. I love that you put those parts in there.
Thank you. I mean, that was definitely intentional. Because I know for me, and I know for many other people in Nella, like this kind of, I mean, one example, this isn't giving too much away, but like one example is Nella has a certain idea of who Hazel's dating. And she finds out that the person so Nella assumes that Hazel is dating another white person because Nella is also dating a white person because Hazel has been able to get to Wagner. She code switches. Nella assumes she lived a similar life that she did, although she was born and raised in Harlem. Like Nella kind of assumes they, you know, because Hazel's made it to this other side, her boyfriend also is white. So Nella's really surprised when she finds out he's not white. And it makes her feel a lot of things. I think a little self-conscious herself about her own relationship. I mean, I think we all make presumptions about other people, based on race, based on class, based on our own experiences. And I really wanted to, I mean, I don't know, there aren't a lot of right answers to a lot of these things either. Like, I do think like, I wanted it to be really a conversation starter and get people thinking about like why we make these decisions and these kind of have these expectations for people that aren't really founded in more than just kind of prejudice and stereotyping.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and like to a much larger extent, getting back to talking about how publishing, how important it is for it to be more diverse, is because when people see something that is different from a thing they understand, it can be inherently scary. And so like, I was really fortunate. I grew up in a very diverse city. I grew up in Lorain, Ohio. So this is the part where our listeners can drink, because I'm going to mention Toni Morrison. It's like a thing I have to say every time I say
I love it.
Like, I grew up in a very diverse area. So I was very lucky, But there are a lot of people in the world, in this country especially, who if they see a person who is Black and they're not used to talking to a Black person, they might feel uncomfortable by nature. And so like having a book like this to start those conversations, I think is so important. And that's why I think it's so essential that publishing continue to publish diverse authors, because everyone always likes to say, you know, books are, it's a way to visit another world or another community. But like if those books don't get published, we can't visit those communities.
Exactly. And I think that's, if I do say so myself, that's what I really hope this book gives you, is there are a lot of different ways you can read this. You can read this on a pure, like the corporate world and the work-life balance kind of level. You could read this on the level of two Black women, just like trying to be Black women in the world. You can read this as, white liberals and how they, respond to certain things or the commodification of diversity, like all of those things. I'm hoping that people will take away and just really, again, like talking about the individual, not just like talking about diversity as a big thing, which is so important, but I really think it starts on that like granular level.
Yeah. To a lesser extent, everything else is heavier. I couldn't stop laughing about the work-life balance stuff because, again, in publishing, the podcast is not part of my day job, but I read all the books for all the author interviews we do.
Yeah.
I was just laughing when like Nella's bringing home a manuscript to read at like, like midnight. I felt that on a cellular level.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And like, cause people all the time, everyone in my life who's also a reader, they're like, you're so lucky. Like anytime we have friends come over, they'll look at all these advanced reader copies I have and they'll grab something and they'll be like, can I just take this? And they're like, you're so lucky to do this. I'm like, yes and no. Because there's always another book to read and it's like, all right,
always.
Well, it's Wednesday, but yep. I guess I'll just read this while I'm watching something. It's like, it never stops.
Exactly. Oh. No, you're so right. And it's funny. I think since I've quit publishing, I feel like I've read more, like even though I was reading a lot, I think reading for fun and for pleasure is like, I don't know. There's just nothing like it.
This isn't a complaint for me. Cause like literally I'm very fortunate. I got to read your book before a lot of other people and I adored it. And then I got to reach out to your publicist and was like, can we do a podcast, please?
Yeah.
And like, so I get that. Like, I know that I'm lucky, but it's so funny. Like, I'm literally looking around me right now. I'm surrounded by books right now that haven't come out yet that I just have this like weight on my chest. I'm like, I need to read all of these books. And
It's like, and also you can't, I feel the same way now though, because I'm reading a lot of things, like people are sending me really amazing things and, trying to do it all, but reading takes time. And I don't know about you, but like, for me, I have to like, especially when I'm like doing things like, talking to people, I have to like switch settings and get into the headspace where I am like reading letters on a page. I like to read hard copies of things versus online, but like switching to that after like scrolling through Twitter, getting emails, like it's a lot of work. So I completely understand that pressure.
It's like I said, it is a very like first world problem. I acknowledge my privilege in that, but it is so funny when people are like, so, and then of course, it's only going to get worse for you, by the way. You're going to be bored with people. Like it's not going to slow down, just so you know.
I know. Bring it on. It's also a good problem to have.
Yeah. So another part of your book that I want to talk about is there is some really fun genre stuff. Calling it fun is a really weird way to say it. Yeah. There's some really interesting genre stuff in there. And I love that it's almost like sprinkled in, like it doesn't hit you over the head. Like there's a lot of, it feels very, very, very grounded for a long time. And then all of a sudden, like something will happen where you'll be like, wait a minute. Well, something's not quite right. Like, did you always know that you wanted that to be a part of the book? And then like, what was the process for you about kind of sprinkling it in here and there?
Yeah, I did. I didn't know what exactly it would be. I knew that, like I said, I knew I'd have Nella, I had Hazel, something would be up with Hazel, something was off with Hazel, but like, how that worked, how that functioned in the book, I wasn't quite sure yet. And I also had a sense of who was behind all of it. But again, like the executioner still wasn't quite sure how to do that part yet. So that I really came to, I mean, after, I think after finishing my first draft, is when I kind of was able to go back and add in, you know, these little suspense notes, these horror notes, I guess I'll just say. The epigraph does have Black history is Black horror, which is a quote from Horror Noir, which is a documentary that I'd seen right around the time, I think a few weeks before I quit actually publishing, a few weeks after I'd started this book, because I've always loved horror. I've always loved sci-fi. You know, The Twilight Zone was one of my favorites growing up, of just like Rod Serling, like being like, we're in this town. It's just like every other town, but not this thing. And then surprise. And it's, I mean, it creeps me out as a kid, but I also found it really a fascinating story, the device of like, kind of, you know, everything seems really normal, but then you're going down this road that you had no idea you're going down. Except there are hints here and there. And I hoped with the epigraph, that would be kind of a hint that things are not all going to be as they seem.
Yeah, so about that. Did you always know how you wanted this to end? Because
yes.
I was like flipping. I was like, I had reached the end of the book and I was still like, there's gotta be, what's, oh my god. Yeah, like, it's a real like mic drop moment.
Well, thank you. Going back to what I said about my love of horror, I also really love endings that are question marks, and very much like you just want to throw the book across the room because you want to know more, but also I just knew that it would end this way because I wanted it again to be a conversation starter. I wanted people to talk about how the ending could have been different. Like I read a lot of those Give Yourself Goosebumps books when I was a kid, and you can pick kind of how the character goes through the story and all the decisions they make. And like, I mean, there's just one ending in this book, but I do think that there are a lot of, I mean, I've talked to different people about what they think happens or what they hope happens to all of the characters. And so I just really love that. And also just like, I mean, the end of Get Out, the end of Night of the Living Dead, the end of, I mean, I'm trying to think of another one, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, like all of those endings are I remember them all very vividly, and those influenced how I think of the entire movie, you know, the entire story. So I just really wanted that effect for readers.
Having read your book when I did and not having other people have read it yet has like been torture because I can't talk about the ending with anyone. I'm just like, I'm throwing the advanced copy at friends. I'm like, you need to read this immediately so we can talk about the end.
How do you think I felt last year? I was like, I want to talk to everybody about this book, but I wasn't even in the stage yet. So I was just like, I hope people like it.
I can imagine like writing that ending and being like, I need to tell someone, but that's not, they have to read it first. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, because you were in publishing, I can't not ask you, are there books that are coming out that you are really excited about that people should know about? Just because, again, this is a unique opportunity where someone else is in publishing, so I gotta ask.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I actually just, I have it right next to me actually, started reading All Her Little Secrets by Wanda M. Morris, and it's coming out in November, I believe. Yeah, November. And from William Morrow, in case you wanted all the love deets. But Wanda is very lovely. And this book starts with, I've just started it again, but it starts with a Black lawyer. She's having an affair with her white boss. And it starts with her finding his body. And so... Awesome. And it's not a spoiler because it's literally in like the first 20 pages or 15 pages, and it's on the back copy, I think. So, but I just love, I'm a true crime enthusiast and just love all the drama and bodies. So really excited about that one. And then also Cultish by Amanda Montell, which is nonfiction. Mm-hmm. I've also started that book and it's amazing. Her voice is so good. Mm-hmm. It's just to look at cults and, you know, where they came from, yeah. why cults exist, what's a cult, what's not a cult. Mm-hmm. And I think with my own thoughts about publishing, as much as I love it, I also kind of feel there are some culty things about
Absolutely.
It.
Yeah.
She's great. So that's mm-hmm. another one that I've started that comes out in June.
Man, you are doing the thing that I do too that no one else is gonna be able to see because of the podcast, but like Zaki is literally like grabbing books from around her screen to like check it. It's such a like a bookish person thing. Yeah.
You could see what's going on above my head right now. Oh my God.
Yeah. I'm literally doing the same thing. I'm like looking around at my books, being like, when can I talk about some of these books that are coming out? Yeah, I totally understand. I totally get that. Okay, so I want to run through, we do what we call the Nerd Nine, just nine lighthearted questions. Okay. I may have walked myself into a corner with this first one because it's what's the last book you finished reading? And I just asked you about
that. Yeah, I finished reading. That's a good question. Because I'm still like starting a few different books. Well, one book that I've read recently that I loved was the Final Revival of Opal and Nev.
Oh,
has been out for a little while. Yeah, by Donnie Walton. Uh-huh. It's so good. It's music. It's the 70s, I believe. I feel like it's been so long since I've read it now.
Yeah,
but takes place over span of years, about a rock duo fronted by a Black woman, and then a white British man. Mm-hmm. And it's great. That's all I'm going to say, because I feel like that's the best and snappiest. It's so emotional, and you will hope that all of the music is real, because she just illustrates these characters so gorgeously.
I will say the audiobook of that is really good. They have a lot of really good narrators for that.
I am excited because one of the women, I believe Bonnie Turpin, she's doing the audiobook for the other Black girl, or one of the voices.
Oh, she is?
Yeah.
She's amazing. So
I cannot wait to hear the audiobook. It's going to be awesome. And then also I'm going to definitely this summer listen to the story again, because I love Donnie Walton's book. It's so good.
It's really good. Do you have a favorite place to read?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think my red couch right now behind me that's my new favorite place, because we didn't have a couch for most of pandemic. So it's wild, a luxury I didn't realize you really need to have sometimes. So.
Oh, that's so funny. Do you remember the book that kind of made you fall in love with reading when you were a kid?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned earlier the Goosebumps series. Yeah. I really loved all of those stories. I would trade Goosebumps books with the other boys in my first grade class, second grade class. Like I was into those books a lot. And then also Roald Dahl. I loved Matilda. Mm-hmm. I loved the BFG. So those two things were really big parts of my reading experiences as a kid.
A couple years ago, I set up an interview with our company CEO and R.L. Stein at BookCon. And it was something where, and then I got to meet him, because I was like, I set it up and I asked him some questions for some other stuff. And I told him kind of exactly what you said. I was like, you know, you're the reason I was so bad at math, because I would put his books like in the math book while I was supposed to be in like third grade math. And I told him, so because of you, I'm terrible at math. But he looks at me and just goes completely deadpan. He's this guy who has he has a hilariously like dry sense of humor. And he just goes, well, you're working in the book world now, right? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, you're welcome. And I was like, okay. I was like, wow, R.L. Stein just absolutely just destroyed me. Just,
you don't need math.
Yeah. Oh, it was so funny.
That's now amazing.
It was so funny. What is one place you'd like to travel that you have not yet been to?
Oh, Greece. I honestly, I think this is kind of funny, but the sister of the traveling pants really like when I read that when I was younger and she goes to meet Kostos. I don't even know, like there are certain things I don't remember about books that I loved and have read, but for some reason, like the Greece just set up that she's in the movie and in the book, I just, it just looks so gorgeous to me. So
do you have a favorite holiday to celebrate?
Halloween.
I can see that. The book, yeah. Are you a coffee person or a tea person?
Coffee.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Yeah, that's the right answer. my co-host has four cats. I have two dogs. We told you about before we started recording. So it's just like our eternal battle.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite food?
I think it's cheese.
Yeah, that works. Cheese is great.
Cheese in all its forms, burrata, mozzarella, string cheese, all of it.
Cheese is the reason I can't be a vegan. Like, I'm a vegetarian, but I can't be a vegan because no cheese.
It's so good.
Last question of these. If you could have dinner with one person alive or dead, who would you pick?
My first thought went to Lucille Ball. I am such a big I Love Lucy fan. I have the entire DVD series above my head as well. I just grew up loving that show, and it's still like whenever I'm really stressed or like, you know, sad or anything, any mood, it just always like boosts me up. And she just seems like such a firecracker and like would have a lot of wisdom, I think.
All right, last question for you. What do you hope readers take away from The Other Black Girl?
So many things. But I think just the one thing I'd say is just this book, I hope, provides just one other example of the Black experience. Four examples really with the four Black women in this book, but just another way of seeing us, of understanding our struggles and our joys. We are a very big group. Black women are diverse. We are not a monolith, but I really hope this book shows us and gives us the space to be all the different things, be messy, be happy, and show readers like, just to be blunt, like why our lives matter, why our stories matter. So that's my main takeaway I hope readers get.
Oh, the book is so, so good. And this was so
delightful.
Zakiya, thank you for joining me.
Such a blast.
Today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.